What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to a new week. Happy holiday season. I hope you are having a wonderful holiday, or at least some happiness.
A good month of December, yeah. End of the year.
Yeah, it has been, I know, just a crazy year for everyone, but yeah. I hope that you are having some fun this holiday season, however you celebrate. And yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, we love you guys. Today, we are going to be talking about a cold case that was solved over 30 years later.
Wow.
And it's really just it's a crazy story. This was a suggested case, so thank you to the several people who suggested it.
Okay.
This is the story of the 1989 murder of Caitlin Arquette.
Oh, okay.
Some people might have heard of this because it was solved just 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it kind of made headlines, and it's a decently well-known case because of who her mother was.
Right.
So with that, author Lois Duncan is best known for her 1973 suspense novel, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mm. This got turned into a movie. So if you recognize it but didn't read the book, you might have seen the movie. It's not an exact replica of the novel, but it's like based on the novel. So you might have seen the movie or read the book, but in the 1990s, Lois Duncan became known for something no one wishes to be quote unquote famous for.
Right.
The murder of her youngest daughter and the subsequent book that she wrote about the case. Lois Duncan Steinmetz was born on April 28th, 1934 to her mother, Lois Duncan, and her father, Joseph Steinmetz. Along with her younger brother, Billy, Lois grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and her parents were professional magazine photographers, and they were most famous for shooting photos of the Ringling Bros and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Nice.
And when she was 14 or 15, she was even photographed by her father for the cover of a magazine. So she was kind of like in that world. And I definitely think that probably contributed to her becoming an author, because even though her parents weren't authors, it's still like in the like publishing
right.
world, all of that. In late childhood, her family relocated to Florida, where Lois spent years around circus performers. After graduating from Sarasota High School in 1952, Lois enrolled at Duke University, and there she met another student named Joseph Cardozo. Eventually, she decided to drop out of school to start a family with Joseph, and the couple went on to have three children. They ended up getting divorced in 1962, and after that, Lois moved with her three children to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and there she began writing greeting cards and fictional confessionals for magazines to make money.
Okay.
So she was already in the writing world. She started writing magazine articles right after dropping out of college. But she, at this point, hadn't written any published novels yet. In 1965, Lois got remarried to a man named Donald Arquette, and together they had two more children, a son named Donald Jr., and finally her youngest daughter, Caitlin, who often went by Kate. Lois Duncan, as I said, started writing magazine articles after she dropped out of college, but then in 1966, she published her first novel.
Nice.
She really began writing and seeing success writing thriller and suspense books. And as I mentioned, one of her most well-known books was published in 1973, I Know What You Did Last Summer. She went on to write several more suspense, horror, and thriller books. And in 1992, she received the Margaret Edwards Award for the American Library Association, or from the American Library Association, for her contribution to writing for teens.
That's cool. That's like a neat little thing to have under your belt.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, though, tragedy would strike her family, and she stopped writing in the thriller genre. Yeah. And after her daughter's murder, she actually wrote some like children's and picture books. And then her last two published works were Who Killed My Daughter, which was a nonfiction account of Kate's unsolved murder, and then a sequel to that, One to the Wolves, which was published in 2013.
Wow.
Ultimately, Lois would pass away in 2016, several years before her daughter's murder would ever be solved.
Oh, that's so sad and heartbreaking to not get that closure.
It really is. And she, you'll hear, but she like worked so hard to get justice for her daughter and find out what happened. And it just, she passed away before she could know what happened.
Yeah.
But let's back up a little bit and talk about what happened to Kate Arquette. Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. Caitlin Claire Arquette was born on September 18, 1970 to Lois Duncan and Donald Arquette in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Kate was outgoing and popular, and she did really well in school. So she was an honor student in high school, and she ended up being accepted to the University of New Mexico for college. She also wanted to attend medical school to become a doctor, so she had some really big dreams.
That's awesome.
Shortly before graduating from high school, 18-year-old Kate moved in with her boyfriend. And this man has been named in some sources, but not in others. I'm not going to name him just because more of the times when he's named is like reports and like websites done by the family and things like that. So in most official, you know, police releases and things like that, he has not been named. So I'm not going to name him.
Okay.
If you really want to know, you can look up his name, but I'm not going to name him. But she moved in with him, and her parents believed that he was just 4 years older than her, which they already didn't love. Because, you know, she's 18. She's a senior in high school.
And a lot changes from, 18 to 22. Even though it doesn't seem like that big of a difference. It's
like a big difference when it's, a high school student versus,
and a college.
So, you know, her parents didn't love that.
Yeah.
But in reality, he was actually 8 years her senior.
Ooh, okay. I mean, teach their own, but my thing is always why? And this is no judgment to literally anybody who has a relationship with that age gap, but it's always why can't you find someone your age at that point? You know, in that stage of your life, obviously there's circumstances that just things happen. You work with people that are older, younger, whatever, and you fall in love. You can't help that. But I don't know.
Especially when the younger person is still in school.
Yeah.
In high school.
High school, you should not be dating a high school girl when you're...
No.
What, 26?
26, yeah. And I feel like as you get older, bigger age gaps don't mean as much. But when you're a high schooler and then a 26-year-old, that's me dating a high schooler.
Doesn't translate well.
Again, no judgment, and especially when you get older. But in this case, it being their high school daughter.
And that's what I mean. And that's really what I mean. He's a 26-year-old man. Why can you not find a 26-year-old girl or a 24-year-old girl or whatever? Why are you dating a high school girl?
Right. Yeah. So her parents didn't love that, but they didn't have any major problems with him.
Mm-hmm.
So Lois would later say, quote, "He was 8 years older than her, but we thought he was only 4 years older because they'd lied to us. She knew we wouldn't let her date someone that much older. But he seemed like a nice guy. She said he was around the house a lot. We liked him."
Okay. That's good.
So they moved in together shortly before Kate graduated from high school. And then she graduated and she was going to be attending the University of New Mexico in the fall. But they moved in together. And after just 6 weeks of living together, Kate reached out to her mom for help. So on July 16th, 1989, Kate got together with her mom and she admitted that she had kind of been having problems with the boyfriend since they moved in together.
Okay.
She told her mom that she wanted her mom to basically lie about where she was and her whereabouts. Mm. So Lois said, quote, "Kate told us she'd had a big fight with her boyfriend. She was breaking up with him and she was going to a girlfriend's house for dinner. She said she would either spend the night there or come back and spend it at our house. She was not going back to the apartment." So on July 16th, she got into a fight with her boyfriend. She was planning to break up with him. She left the apartment and she got together with her mom. Then she was going to go to a friend's house for dinner. And then she told her mom that she was either going to stay at the friend's house for the night or go back to her parents' house.
Right.
At 9:30 that night, Kate was at her friend's house and she stayed until 10:45 p.m. when she left to head back to her parents' house for the night. She was heading east along Lomas Road in Albuquerque when she was attacked.
No.
Kate was inside her car when she was shot twice in the head, and her car then jumped the median and crashed into a pole at the intersection of Lomas and Arno Streets.
That's so scary.
Now, we don't know exactly what happened, but it's believed that someone basically pulled up alongside her car and shot at her.
That's so scary.
Like, it was so random and just, like, shot at inside your car. It's not like you were even, like, pumping gas or at a convenience store, or, like, outside of your car. She was literally in her car driving.
Yeah. And that's it's scary for so many reasons, because it could be somebody that you know that is targeting you. It could be somebody that you do not know that is targeting you. It could be somebody that you do not know that you accidentally cut off in traffic or didn't use your turn signal or whatever. Or it could just be a random, like, crime of opportunity. And that's, like, so terrifying.
It really is. So scary. So Lois got a call from the emergency room at the hospital around midnight. And they told her that her daughter was there and had been injured. Lois said, quote, "They wouldn't tell me what happened on the phone, so my husband and I drove to the hospital and learned Kate had been shot twice in the head. She was in a coma."
Gosh.
Police went to the apartment where Kate was living with her boyfriend, and they found him there. And they said he was completely unaware of what had happened and that his girlfriend was basically, like, on the brink of death. Of course, he was the first one to be questioned, and he told police that night he had been out with friends, eating, drinking, and playing pool. Detective Steve Gallegos found a note on the kitchen table in the apartment saying something along the lines of, quote, "Hun, I'll be home at, like, XYZ time." Mm. The boyfriend told the detective that note was written by Kate, and that note will come back into play later, so just keep that in mind.
Okay.
So after police left the apartment, Kate's boyfriend headed to the hospital to be with her and her family. And unfortunately, less than 24 hours after she was shot, Kate passed away from her injuries.
Gosh, that's just amazing. Amazing that she even survived that long.
Yeah, she was basically in a coma for, like, 20 hours.
It's crazy.
And also, unfortunately, her case quickly went cold. There were a couple witnesses, but nobody that saw anything definitive, and there wasn't really any evidence, so there weren't any leads. 6 months after Kate's murder, investigators ruled that she had been the victim of a random act of violence. But Lois, her mother, was not buying this. She thought her daughter was targeted, and she was determined to find out the truth. Through her own investigation, Lois learned that Kate had possibly gotten mixed up with a major crime organization a few months before her death.
What?
So allegedly, Kate and her boyfriend got involved in a major complex insurance scam. Some sources say that Lois learned about this from some of Kate's friends. Other sources say she learned about it through a PI. But either way, this scam was allegedly set up by a powerful Vietnamese gang. And I should mention that Kate's boyfriend was Vietnamese and had several Vietnamese friends.
Okay.
So, allegedly, Kate's boyfriend staged a fake accident in a car that Kate had rented with her parents' credit cards or credit card. So after this, like, quote-unquote accident, everyone involved claimed to have injuries in their necks and lower backs. They were then treated by a doctor who was also part of the scam. And the settlement and, like, insurance and everything was being handled by a law firm in Orange County, California. As a result of this, Kate and her boyfriend ended up receiving $1,500 as part of the settlement. And while this had all seemingly gone down without a hitch in terms of the, like, insurance scam part of it, Lois believed that this could have been related to her murder. Lois said, quote, "It was evidently a major multi-million dollar insurance scam, and Kate had found out about it. At the time, we didn't know how we could fit this in with her shooting. But all of a sudden, there was something that suggested a possible motive. If Kate was breaking up with her boyfriend, maybe she was a danger to the people who had arranged this."
Right, because they might be afraid that she would tell somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, she was breaking up with her boyfriend and was no longer, like, quote-unquote loyal to him.
But why would she just go out of her... I mean, I feel like if she... I mean, she probably knew that if she was to do something like that, she would put herself at danger or, like, in danger. So, like, why would they just automatically assume that she's gonna go and snitch, you know?
Yeah, and
but
I don't know if there was any evidence that made them think that, like, she was gonna... You know, like,
true.
I don't think she was really, like, talking to anybody about it or anything.
Yeah.
But they just thought that that could have been a possible
It's a loose end, so let's just
take
care of it, which is awful to even...
Yeah. Lois then learned that several calls were made from Kate's apartment at the basically exact time of her death. So she was, went, like, just minutes after she was pronounced dead at the hospital, these calls were made from her apartment, and she obviously wasn't making them, and her boyfriend was at the hospital with the family, so he wasn't making them.
Interesting.
So the apartment should have been empty, but these calls, somebody was inside making calls, and the calls were made to a paralegal in Orange County, and this was the same paralegal that worked on the insurance scam settlement.
Oh, okay.
So after learning all of this, Lois asked a local crime reporter, a man named Mike Gallagher, to investigate further. Through his investigation, Gallagher learned that Kate was afraid of her boyfriend's friends more so than of her boyfriend himself.
Yeah.
Reportedly, the friends would make fun of her, and she felt threatened enough that she changed the locks on her apartment several times.
Oh my gosh.
Now, remember that note that was left on the kitchen table?
Yeah.
That the
was allegedly
claimed,
from her.
Yeah, was written by her. So Gallagher got a copy of the note, and it was immediately clear that Kate was not the one who had written it. The handwriting did not match. And it was a very clear mismatch. It wasn't like a, maybe. It was like, this does not match her handwriting.
And then, like, why lie? Because you know somebody's going to be like, nope, that's not her handwriting at all.
Yeah. Very, very suspicious.
Yeah.
Gallagher also learned from Kate's landlord that on the night she died, the same night that those phone calls were made, there were several of the boyfriend's friends that were at their apartment drinking. So all of this seems suspicious and like a possible motive for Kate's murder, but the detective on the case did not believe the theory had any truth to it. He said, quote, "I don't think that the Vietnamese connection is related to this case. Thus far, I have not received any information to indicate positively that they are involved in this homicide."
And did he give a reason for that? Or he just threw his investigation, was like, nope,
he's basically saying there's no like solid evidence, like there's no real proof other than like it's all speculative and like kind of like circumstantial evidence. There's no like real evidence to point to this.
Okay.
Police did have one lead around the 6 month mark, a man named Juvenal Escobedo. Now, Escobedo had recently sold his brown Chevy Camaro, and one witness reported seeing a brown Chevy Camaro chasing a young woman in a car similar to Kate's on the night that she was shot. Escobedo was actually arrested and held for several months, but eventually the charges were dropped against him because there was no other evidence connecting him to the crime.
Okay.
Kate's family remained convinced that the insurance scam was a very strong possibility to be the motive in her death. They pressured police to speak to the boyfriend again, and they did. And this time, he admitted that he had taken part in that insurance scam, but he maintained that he did not have anything to do with Kate's death. And it doesn't seem like Lois believed that the boyfriend actually did it, but she just believed that he might have known who did it.
Right. That's what I was thinking, too. Like, just because he was like, oh, I had nothing to do with her death, doesn't mean that he didn't know exactly who did.
Right. But he and his friends were never considered official suspects.
Okay.
Reportedly, on the night after Kate's funeral, her boyfriend's friends found him covered in blood. He had stabbed himself in the stomach, claiming he did so because he felt guilty over Kate's death. And he told police that he believed if they hadn't fought that day, she wouldn't have been out driving and wouldn't have been a victim of this random crime.
Okay. I don't know. That my initial reaction is like he's guilty for something more than just, oh, we got into a fight and she wouldn't have been doing that. But also it's like when you're in love with somebody and like, I mean,
yeah.
I would never stab myself in the stomach, I don't think.
But imagine like if your significant other, you got in a fight, they were out driving and then they were killed.
Yeah, I mean,
like
the
guilt.
Yeah, I get that. I do, but...
And he was eventually cleared as a suspect by police. He was not considered a suspect. Lois said, quote, "Our family doesn't have any real idea who pulled the trigger on Kate. The one thing we feel very strong about is that she was not shot randomly by people just out on a spree, having fun, shooting a pretty girl in a red car. We believe Kate was killed because she was going to expose illegal activities involving her boyfriend and his companions." While appearing on Unsolved Mysteries in 1993, Lois Duncan mainly focused on the insurance scam theory. However, around the same time, she mentioned another suspect, Paul Apodaca. So Apodaca was the first person at the crime scene after Kate was shot. He was driving a Volkswagen, and some witnesses saw a Volkswagen fleeing right after the shooting. Mm. Lois claimed that officers never really questioned him about his potential involvement. Basically, they said that he happened to be passing by, and that's why he was there, but never really questioned him further. Lois still considered him to be a suspect, though.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Lois Duncan would never learn the truth about what happened to her daughter. On June 15th, 2016, 82-year-old Lois passed away at her home in Florida due to undisclosed causes.
So sad.
It would be another 8 years before Kate's murder would be solved. In the late 1980s, there was a series of murders of young women in Albuquerque, New Mexico that cast a gripping fear over the community. In June 1988, 21-year-old Althea Oakley was walking home from a party on the University of New Mexico campus when she was stabbed to death.
Jeez.
On September 9th, 1988, 13-year-old Stella Gonzalez was walking near Tangley Beach with a friend when she was shot to death.
Oh my God.
And then Caitlin Arquette was shot to death in July 1989. All three of these murders would remain unsolved for over 30 years.
That's insane. And they're Are you about to tell me they're all connected?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
In July 2021, the man who Lois Duncan had once mentioned as a suspect in her daughter's murder, Paul Apodaca, was arrested on a probation violation.
What?
And while in custody, he made a shocking confession.
I have chills.
He confessed to murdering Althea Oakley, Stella Gonzalez, and Caitlin Arquette.
Why?
He also admitted to raping several more women.
Disgusting pig.
He had actually been convicted in 1995 for raping his 14-year-old stepsister.
Ew.
She's 14, and he told the judge at his sentencing that he did this so that he could be in jail with his younger brother.
For what?
So his younger brother, Mark, had been convicted of killing someone in 1992 and was in prison. So he basically told the judge, I did this so I could be with him in jail and, like, quote unquote, protect him.
Mm. There's other things you could have done, buddy, to go mm-hmm. to jail if you really want to go to jail that bad.
Yeah. Apodaca was ultimately sentenced to 20 years in prison, and he was sent to a different facility than his brother. Right?
That's what you get. Of course. They're going to... Yeah. If you tell them that, they're going to be like, we're going to make sure.
Yeah. You don't get what you want. Yeah.
I mean, they typically don't put you with people like your family or like your spouse or your significant, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Because of it's just problematic. But
yeah.
Yeah. You fucked yourself on that one, buddy.
Mm-hmm. He was eventually released, but he spent the following years in and out of prison, in and out of jail. And when he was arrested on the probation violation in 2021, he appeared to be homeless.
Okay.
So Apodaca told police that he had a deep hatred for women, which was his motive behind his horrifying crimes.
No, what the fuck?
According to the criminal complaint, he said, quote, I think what made me do it, what made me attack her, was all the hatred I had for women. Because growing up, I see men treating women bad, and they go for the bad guys. And I try to be nice and go for and be good, and they just didn't want that. So I was jealous and had hatred, and I just released it.
Because they probably knew your true character, which was a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, his attorney claimed that he seemed to be intoxicated at the time of his confession and that he was in need of medical attention. So he was trying to say, like, this confession wasn't an actual confession. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. Police reported that Paul Apodaca had actually been on their radar for a while. And when he confessed, he had information that only the killer would know.
Hmm.
In August 2021, Paul Apodaca was indicted for the murder of Althea Oakley. In December 2021, he was indicted for the murder of Stella Gonzalez. And in February 2022, he was indicted for the murder of Kate Arquette.
Wow.
Albuquerque Police Deputy Commander Kyle Hartstock said, quote, Paul Apodaca is a serial killer in our view, and he picked his victims seemingly at random, but they all shared one trait. They were women. They were women in vulnerable circumstances at the time who were seemingly alone. And that was his only reason, opportunity, and his own perceived hatred of females at the time.
That is not a good reason because not all women are the same. And these women, you didn't even know them to even know what kind of person they were if they went after, you know, that quote unquote type of man or whatever. Like, how fucking dare you?
So sick. After Apodaca's indictments, the APD released a statement saying, quote, it is gratifying to see charges have finally been brought for the 1989 murder of Caitlin Arquette. While Paul Apodaca confessed to the killing, this case required a comprehensive review as a result of the publicity that has surrounded the case for three decades. Our most seasoned detectives conducted a thorough investigation of all facts and evidence to ensure we were charging the man responsible for this senseless death. We will continue to work with the district attorney to ensure we get justice for the family of Caitlin Arquette and the entire community.
Yes.
Now, after the indictment, Apodaca's lawyers released a statement saying, quote, the district attorney's office has only been interested in litigating this case in the press because they know how incomplete and empty these investigations have been. So it is no surprise that another indictment, surely to be followed by slanted and incorrect public statements, has been handed down. We look forward to the opportunity to show the court and a jury that Mr. Apodaca is not guilty of these allegations. According to Inside Edition, his lawyer maintains, quote, that he was an intoxicated and ill man who could not sit up, could not open his eyes, and was unable to drink water without assistance during his summer 2021 arrest, which affected his alleged confession.
So because he was intoxicated?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to say.
People false confess all the time. People are, you know, urged, whatever, forced, if you will, manipulated into false confessing. But alcohol is kind of like a truth serum. So mm-hmm. I feel like he would be more apt to tell the truth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's not always the case, but
sometimes.
Most of the time. Because you're drunk. You can't even like think of lies, you know?
Yeah.
You're just like, ugh, word vomit.
Very true. So his lawyers are basically trying to get his confession thrown out. Now, according to the Albuquerque Journal in January 2023, Deputy DA David Waymire told the judge that they were working on tracking down and interviewing witnesses. His defense claimed that his confessions were unconstitutionally obtained. So first, his attorney claimed that the first officer to pick him up when he was arrested failed to read him his rights. This was proven to not be true. He was read his rights.
I was going
to
say, how does he know?
His lawyer also tried to claim that the authorities interviewing him did not provide medical treatment before questioning him because it's believed that he was picked up basically on the University of New Mexico campus. It was the dead of the summer, and they believe he was possibly suffering from heat stroke. So they're trying to say, like, he needed medical attention and you didn't give it to him.
Okay.
Video from, like, lapel video from the officers that were in there before his interview showed that they were asking him, do you need water? Do you need this? They were, like, telling him to take his hat off so he would cool down. So it's not clear if he got, like, a doctor to see him, but they weren't just, like, forcing him in this state that he was in to talk. Like, right. They were trying to help him. On October 23rd, 2023, a judge ruled that the statements Apodaca made to police during his confession in July 2021 will be allowed in trial. So jurors will be allowed to hear his confessions.
Good.
Currently, 54-year-old Paul Apodaca has been indicted for the murders of Stella, Althea, and Kate. He's been charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder, and he is set to go to trial next year.
Damn.
Carrie Arquette decided to become a criminologist after her sister's murder. She watched their mother fight for justice for Kate until her death, and she wanted to make a difference for victims.
Yeah.
Carrie said after Apodaca was arrested that her mother, quote, is here and she is looking down.
No. Ripped my heart out.
I know. She said it will take time to get closure because of how many questions remain. She said, quote, this confession is just a start. The family has innumerable questions, the whys and the hows, and a lot of blanks to be filled in before we can sit back and think that justice has been served. Yeah. It's been too many years since we've been trying to fill in those blanks by ourselves.
That's so true because, I mean, it is a confession. It is circumstantial to some extent. They don't have that hard evidence like DNA or like he still has the murder weapon or
exactly
whatever the case is. But so I can see how it would be difficult to really get like full closure and be at peace because there would always be that question in the back of your mind of like, what if we got the wrong guy?
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's still no, you don't know why. Like, you don't, yeah. Like, yes, he said hatred for women or whatever, but they're like, we want.
And there's not always a why. There really isn't. Sometimes people are just fucked up and they just want to kill somebody, or they're fucked up and they do something stupid, and as a result, it kills or hurts somebody.
Mm-hmm. And it really seems like that was the case here. He just wanted to kill. Althea Oakley was studying to be a teacher with her mother. They were both going to school together when she was murdered.
Oh my gosh.
Althea was a gorgeous young girl, and she was very friendly, always helping others in need. Stella Gonzalez was just an innocent 13-year-old girl when she was murdered.
That's so fucked up and unacceptable. Like, she's not even a woman for her to fit into your category of, like, why you're going to kill somebody.
And Kate Arquette had so many big dreams ahead of her when her life was just randomly and senselessly taken. Her murder haunted her family for more than 30 years, forcing her mother to stop writing in the thriller genre, and the family was never able to get closure. Hopefully now they will be able to work closer to getting closure and some form of peace, knowing that the person who did this to Kate will pay for what he did. And hopefully it will lead to him being
convicted.
Like, his lawyer's trying to throw out everything, but already the judge ruling that the confessions can be included.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is the story of the solved murder of Caitlin Arquette. And it's just so, it's so sad that Lois Duncan never got to learn the truth. And she really worked so hard. And there are still some, like, questions about, you know, like, the phone calls and the boyfriend's friends and stuff like that. But I really don't think that any of that is connected. I think it's just an unfortunate coincidence.
Right.
But I don't think any of that is, like, connected to her actual murder. But it's just so... it's so sad, and it's so sad that her mother never got to learn the truth, because her mother did have her, or have him, on her radar. Like, she had,
which is amazing, because, like, how?
Yeah. And Carrie has said, like, they're so frustrated that he wasn't interviewed more, questioned more. Yeah.
When her mother was alive.
Yeah. Especially because she, so, obviously, like, he was the first one on the scene, but just the fact that he had a record, I feel like, should have led to him being looked at more.
It definitely warranted a little more investigation. I mean, sure, just because you are a criminal and you committed a crime once doesn't always mean you're gonna repeat, but
yeah, but
just look into it a little bit more, just a little bit more.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it took a long time, but at least now he has been indicted and, you know, is going to trial. And I'll definitely keep you guys updated once that trial happens. And, you know, I'll keep you guys in the loop of what's going on. And hopefully justice for all three of them will be served.
Amen. I hope so.
But thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for being here. We will see you next time with a brand new case. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.